Welcome to Thrive Deeper, the show based on the Thrive Bible reading guides. This is an ongoing conversation about God's Word with Thrive author, Dr. Matthew Jacoby.
Good morning, Matt. Back in the studio, second day in a row, actually.
We've recorded
our two podcasts back to back because you've been unwell. And so here we are back in the studio without our friend Connell, who's normally with us listeners on our Perspectives podcast. But today, Thrive Deeper, we continue through the Thrive Bible reading guides as we continue to look at the book of Proverbs.
Mm.
And again, just a reminder, listeners, we are taking a slightly different approach. Rather than working through verse by verse, chapter by chapter through Proverbs, we're picking sort of these mega themes that Proverbs kind of deal with in a number of different places. And today, Matt, we're going to be looking particularly at wealth and poverty, diligence and sloth.
Yeah. Well,
sloth,
I put those words together because those topics sort of sit together in the Proverbs. And, you know, I think this underscores the fact that the Proverbs is a very practical book and it, you know, deals with practical life issues. But it also reflects to us the fact that these sorts of issues matter. And there's, you know, one of the interesting things in doing it this way is that we are actually looking at what are the most prominent topics. And this one actually is right up there in terms of one of the most. In fact, you know, in the last episode, we looked at speech and the importance of speech. And that's interesting to note. Yeah. You know, we pointed out it's interesting to note how much emphasis is put on the things that we say and the use of our language. Massive theme in the Proverbs. The other one, and look, if you put all of these ones together, it's quite possible that this one ends up being even more. If that's if you put these things together.
Yeah.
So the ideas of, you know, working diligently and or the opposite of that, you know, laziness or the old word for that is sloth.
I was going to say, I thought that was a character out of the movie Ice Age, but anyway.
well, sloths are called sloth.
Because they are.
Because they're so slow and
they're slothful.
And they seem to not do much during the day. And so that's why they're called sloth. So you know, diligence and laziness, you know, I mean, this is a massive theme throughout the, and associated with that, and this is interesting, Stu, associated with those ideas, talk of wealth and poverty and wealth. And this is the thing about the nature of the Proverbs. They're not promises.
No.
And this is important to point out, particularly in this episode, because, you know, these Proverbs aren't saying, if you do this, this will always happen.
Yeah.
This is about what normally happens
principles.
In life. That's right. They're principles of what normally happens, sort of natural processes. But of course, there are lots of things that can interrupt that and so forth. You know, so for example, in Proverbs 10:22, it says, the blessing of the Lord brings wealth without painful toil for it. Now, this is the interesting thing about the Proverbs, because there's a lot of stuff about toil. But the point is, you know, the blessing of the Lord brings wealth without painful toil for it. And I think the point is, you know, the blessing of the Lord, it makes us into better people. It makes us into more functional human beings and therefore more productive human beings.
Mm.
It makes us wiser. And I'm just in terms of normal, in normal situations. So again, this is about what sort of normally happens and what can be expected to flow from that. And so as a result of becoming more productive human beings, there's a sense in which that, you know, often leads to, you know, success, a measure of success and even wealth potentially.
And I think important to say too, wealth isn't only talking about financial wealth or materialistic wealth. It can be spiritual wealth as well. And we see Jesus talk a bit about that in the New Testament. But
I think though here, Stu,
it is. Totally.
I think this is actually talking about material life and material wealth, which would have been understood in those times in terms of, you know, the number of your flocks and your herds and so forth.
And of course, in those times too, very much connected to God or the gods, because that was the culture at the time. If you were doing really well, the gods were obviously blessing you. And so that was part of it. I just thought it would be good to kick off, you know, as well as you say, the blessing of the Lord brings wealth without painful toil for it, as we reflect back on the dominion mandate, because when we were created, we were before the fall, when the garden was perfect, Adam was commissioned to work and
that's
look
right.
after it.
That's right. The word work is there in Genesis chapter 2 in the perfect state in the Garden of Eden. So we weren't just sitting around doing nothing.
Yeah.
we were, there were gardeners in the garden. Yeah. And there's, you know, there's meant to be a sense of satisfaction in work and activity. And that's part of the, you know, that was part of the enjoyment of the original creation.
And part of us becoming, you know, obviously we're created who we're meant to be, but I think God also puts in us things that he wants us to develop and grow and work on.
That's right.
Gifts and abilities and skills and things. And they're not just there to sit idle. They're there for us to use and work. And
that's right. So fill the earth and subdue it. And of course, that has the sense of, you know, maintaining God's order, bringing out the best in, you know, in creation. And so that, you know, potentially involved a lot of work. Now, it's interesting that in that proverb that the blessing of the Lord brings wealth without painful toil for it is a kind of allusion to the curse.
Yes.
You know, where the ground is cursed and it will now produce thorns and thistles and it's not going to yield easily for you. And so, you know, you picture there a kind of desert, kind of arid desert thing where you're going to have to dig canals and you're going to have to, you know, pull all the thorns out and, you know, by the sweat of your brow. I mean, in a way that is still inevitable. It's not even saying that if you, you know, that the blessing of the Lord completely takes that away. But there's a sense of with this, the wisdom that comes that will enable you to draw together resources and do things in ways that you're going to be maximizing that effort. And I mean, this is the domain of the Proverbs is all about, you know, how to do things well.
How can we be the successfully. Best human being? Yeah, how can we be the best human being that we can be? Basically?
That's right. So that, you know, I mean, there's advice here about finances and you know, looking out for people that are going to going to trick you out of things. And I mean, there's really good and very practical advice
wisdom
here.
Wisdom and discernment, And I think, again, just as we kick off, a reminder that we began with Proverbs, wisdom begins with the fear of the Lord. And I think as we read through all of this, that's that healthy sense of, you know, we're doing what we do for God.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's another passage, and I'm going to struggle to remember where it is, where it says, whatever you do, do as though you're doing it as unto the Lord.
Yeah, that's right.
And
yeah, so Paul says that. Yeah.
Yeah, that brings us to a sense of, hey, I'm going to give my best, not my second best here.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's important context, I think, Stu, that this idea that everything we do is meant to be an act of worship to God. It's utilizing the abilities that God has given us, even the life and the effort and the strength that God has given us to actually do something productive. And I would add to that, contribute productively towards society. Even God says through Jeremiah, you know, in Jeremiah 29 to the exiles, you know, when you go into Babylon, like contribute productively to the shalom, to the
peace of
the, right. Be a part of that society, plant crops. And so we are, you know, we are meant to invest productively in our society. Now, of course, there are lots of complexity to that because society is, you know, is inherently corrupted in many ways. But this was true of Babylon, and yet God still says through Jeremiah to the exiles, when you go in there, don't just sort of say, we refuse to get involved in this, you know, evil empire. No, contribute something positive, right? Yeah. You know, be that positive influence in the midst of it.
And I think that speaks a bit to, it's not so much how much you've got, it's what you're doing with what God's given you.
Yeah.
What are you actually doing with what you've got?
Yeah.
Whether that's a little or whether that's a lot.
Yeah.
What are you doing with
it? And that's the parable of the talents, you know, in Matthew 25.
Totally.
You know, that one, you know, one person was given, you know, one talent, another, you know, five, another 10. And there was a sense of, you know, you're only expected to make, you know, what you have work for you. And, you know, we're each given abilities and capacities and applying that to life and contributing productively towards community and society is important.
That's
part
right.
of the biblical ethic. You know, 6 days you shall labor, you know, and the seventh day we rest. I mean, in our society, we get a 2-day weekend normally. Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing is actually having something I've noted from going over to Israel, they have very much a 6-day week, but they also have all these festivals.
Yeah.
So it's similar, but because of all the festivals, there's a similar amount of time off. So, but the you know, whereas throughout scripture, a lot of the emphasis on, you know, observing the seventh day, in the Proverbs, you could say that the emphasis is on what you do the other 6 days, you know, it's being diligent. So it says here, and that the one of the themes that Proverbs is well known for is its this theme of wealth and diligence, and the sluggard really gets it. You know, there's this character called the sluggard that really gets, gets it from the writer of Proverbs. So go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer or ruler, yet it stores its provisions in summer and gathers its food at harvest.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, Jesus tells the story of the man who stored up in barns, and then he said, well, now I'm going to build even bigger barns. And, you know, and it's interesting that Jesus says in that context, and this is classic proverb sort of wisdom tradition, he says about that person, you fool, who knows but this very day that your life will be required of you, and then who will get what you store up?
So,
if that seems like a contradiction to, you know, to this advice, you know, making sure you're working hard, you're storing up for hard times. Classic Joseph, you know, Joseph in Egypt, you know, storing up, for the 7 years of famine. That's a good thing to do, right?
Yes.
It's a wise thing to do. And yet there are always these balancing points that get made. And even within the Proverbs, we'll see there's plenty there about the dangers of storing up wealth. So you have store up wealth for the, you know, for a rainy day, and then you got all of this stuff about the dangers of storing up. You think, well, is it one or the other? And it's not actually about one or the other. It's about taking on both points, making sure that you're being diligent, that you're being wise, that you're storing up wealth, whatever it might be. You're developing your superannuation, you know, so that you can be independent when when you're older or whatever it is. But then at the same time, don't put your hope in that.
No,
that's the
right.
Jesus point. Don't put your hope in that, right?
Yeah.
Don't make your life all about that, because if your life is all about that, then that becomes pointless, right?
Yeah.
And that is an equally ubiquitous theme throughout Scripture.
That kind of takes you towards greed, doesn't it? Really, it's just I've got enough, but I actually want more.
Yeah.
And then I want more and still more. And I think also there's an element of, even in that particular proverb, yet it stores up provisions in summer and gathers its fruit at harvest. It's storing up what it needs.
Yeah.
Not storing up more than it needs. And I think, you know, there's an element of being generous in our lives as well with what we've been given.
Yeah, that's right. And then how long, this is still in, goes on from there. How long will you lie there?
Chapter 6. Yep.
When will you get up from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber. This one I always remember. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come upon you like a thief and scarcity like an armed man.
Yeah, totally.
You think, you know, a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and you think, what? Is this, are we being encouraged here to be workaholics?
No,
absolutely not. It's making a point, albeit somewhat poetically.
It's speaking to a pattern too, isn't it? Really?
That's right. That if you get into too much of a pattern of that, then, you know, then things are going to go awry.
Oh, I'll get to it tomorrow. Yeah. I'll get to it tomorrow. I'll get to it tomorrow. Tomorrow never comes, and then you wonder why you don't have anything.
That's right. And so the issue there is laziness and you know, diligent use of our time. So 10 verse 4, lazy hands make for poverty, but diligent hands bring wealth. And of course, again, it's not a promise this is always going to happen. You can work hard and things just don't because of economics, and there's so many different variables, isn't there? So you can work so hard and then find your business just fall through the floor because of, you know, an economic situation, as I think, in fact, is probably the case for a lot of people in at the time that we're recording this podcast.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of talking to a lot of people who have worked very hard but whose businesses are struggling because of the economic situation. So that's an example where, you know, I think as long as you have done
– yes.
If you feel that you have done your best, then you can actually stand before God and say, God, I've done, I've done my part, you know, and I'm looking for your provision and your blessing here. Now, this doesn't mean that God doesn't allow us to go through times of, you know, restricted means and, you know, times of scarcity, because sometimes we can learn, you know, we can gain wisdom. Even in those, you know, in those times, you know, but you know, the principle is here, that diligence, that, you know, you can't expect diligence. It's not just going to drop out of the sky. Yes. Oh, the Lord's going to do it for me. You know, Lord's going to bless me. Well, again, what are you doing? It's not quite the Lord helps those who helps themselves, which, no, by the way, isn't in the Bible, right? It's not in the Bible.
But what are we doing with what
we've been given? But it's not entirely, it's not entirely untrue either, actually. Mm. Yeah. I mean, there's a sense in which God has already given us abilities and gifts and effort, and he will give wisdom to those who ask, and he will give insight. And so he expects us to apply that and give our best effort to things.
And I think a good question that I've asked in different seasons of my life is, rather than worrying about what I don't have, what do I have and what am I doing with
it? Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah, that's right. All hard work brings profit, but mere talk leads only to poverty. I love that.
Yeah.
It's like, what is that thing that you've just been talking about doing for so long?
Yeah.
And talking and talking and talking. At some point, actually do something. And there's a sense in which there's something wise about actually act. You know what I mean? And it may not work out, right? But, you know, as it says here, all hard work brings profit. A profit. Now, eventually, and it may not be that specific thing, but, you know, if you work hard with that and you apply that as a pattern of life, something's going to work out, really, you know.
And we all know those people, don't we, right, that have a million ideas. Yeah. And every time you see them, they're still talking about these ideas.
Exactly.
And then yet not doing much, you know.
Yeah, anyway, yeah, that's right. One of the interesting things here is this theme of, you know, sleeping too much. You know, do not love sleep or you will grow poor. Mm. I mean, Proverbs 20, verse 13, do not love sleep, you will grow poor, stay awake, and you will have food to spare. Now, again, I mean, it's not advocating sort of
24/7.
Yeah, because we need, you know, as any health consultant will tell you, you need a good amount of sleep for your body and your brain and so forth. So that's really important. I mean, it's talking about sort of endless, like the, you know, sort of endlessly sleeping until, you know.
It's being a teenager for the rest of your life.
Exactly.
Staying in bed until 11
a.m. Yeah,
11 o'clock of the day. I love the example he gives in 24:30 where he actually takes, you know, he's walking past a field and notices what's happened in a vineyard that, you know, no one had really looked after. And just taking that example and applying it and saying, you know, I applied my heart to what I observed and learned a lesson from what I saw.
Yeah.
Again, a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. That's a repeat of what we read before. And poverty will come on you like a thief and scarcity like an armed man.
And it's interesting, the picture there is, you know, he says, I went past the field of a sluggard, past the vineyard of someone who had no sense. Mm. And he talks about, you know, he saw thorns coming up everywhere and weeds were everywhere. Yep. And, you know, I think there's, again, this is wisdom. This is principle. I think this is a principle of life that doesn't just apply to your field.
Yeah.
There's a diligence in lots of areas of life that if you don't plant good stuff, bad stuff will grow up.
Yeah, that's great.
And so, I mean, this is the case with relationships. If you don't plant good stuff in your relationships, then the bad stuff is going to come up. If you're a, you know, if you're a boss at work and if you don't plant encouragement and affirmation, then the weeds, so to speak, in inverted commas, are going to grow up in your team in environment. And so if you want a good work environment, if you want good social situation, if you want good relationships, if you want a good marriage, you actually have to plant good things in that, because if you don't plant good things, what will actually happen as default, it's not even about planting bad things. If you don't plant, that's right. If you don't plant good things, bad things are going to grow. So that, you know, because again, these proverbs, okay, that's talking about a field, but we're not all farmers and we're meant to take these principles and actually apply them to our lives generally. So
27, 23 is a good one, and on to 24. A lot to read into that one, I think. Be sure you know the condition of your flocks. Give careful attention to your herds, for riches do not endure forever and a crown is not secure for all generations.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So you, it's, you know, the advice here is don't just rest with how things are. Think, you know, you got to think like track with how things are really going.
Yeah.
Track with how are your employees really going. It's this longevity. It's building into the longevity. So
rather than resting on our laurels is a term that we would use. Oh, things seem to be going quite well. I'll sit back and take a rest. If we don't keep an eye on whatever it is that's going well or investing in those relationships or as you say, in workplaces, if we've got staff working for us, then it doesn't take long before that wealth will diminish. And
I think that Proverbs 24:27, put your outdoor work in order and get your fields ready. After that, build your house. Essentially, in an agrarian society, this is about make sure that you have the means to live before you build what you choose to live in.
Yeah.
So this is a picture of someone who builds a big house and then sort of can't afford to keep it up, because the priority here is, you know, make sure that you build the means, and then when you have the means, then you can build the house.
Yeah.
You know, don't build the house if you don't have the means.
Yeah.
So, you know, and actually, I mean, this goes back to the theme of in the beginning of chapter 6, there's a warning about debt. And this is an interesting one, I think, in our age. You know, my son, if you have put up security for your neighbor, if you have shaken hands in pledge for a stranger, you have been trapped by what you have said, ensnared by the words of your mouth. I mean, he's talking about putting up a pledge for someone else.
Yes.
Right. So, you know, he's talking about freeing yourself, since you have fallen to your neighbor's hands. Free yourself like a gazelle from the hand of the hunter, like a bird from the snare of the fowler. In ancient times, this practice of usury and charging exorbitant interest, I mean, comparatively, our interest rates, even at the time of recording, are pretty bad.
Yeah.
You know, these are times where interest rates could be like triple, quadruple that. And it's, you know, there's plenty there that is saying to us, watch out how much, you know, debt you get caught into. Mm-hmm. So there's a bit of wisdom there as well.
And one of the challenges with debt, you know, I think, and we're not saying, we're not at all saying that we shouldn't borrow money in appropriate ways. Mm. You know, we all probably have had or do have mortgages.
Which can be a very wise thing to do, actually, if you have the means. Yeah.
But I think also, you know, the danger is recognizing that when we do owe money, to some degree, there's a level of control they have over us, because it eliminates some of our choices potentially. Yeah. And so being mindful of that as well.
Yeah. And that goes back to that thing of before you build your house.
Yeah.
Make sure you've got the means, right? Otherwise, you're gonna be trapped in that sort of situation. Yeah. I don't know if you noticed this, Stu, when you were reading through the Proverbs on this theme, but there are a lot of Proverbs about the benefits of wealth. You think, I'm not quite sure how to take this.
Yeah.
You know, wealth attracts many friends, but even the closest friend of the poor person deserts them. It's like, again, you got to understand the genre of literature that we're dealing with here. This isn't saying,
this is what should happen.
Yeah, go and be mates with rich people, and abandon, you know, or become rich so that you have many friends. It's an observation about how things work, right? He observes a wealthy person attracts many friends, and it's proved that's a fairly ambivalent observation. He's not saying it's good or bad. He's just saying that's just the way that it works.
Yeah.
But even the closest friend of the poor person deserts them, which sadly is often the case. So that has a slightly pejorative tint to it. Like there's a slightly negative tint to that. It's that observation, you know. Mm. It's like, you're rich people. They're all that. Yeah. You have heaps of friends, you know. And suddenly when you're poor, you know, suddenly, hey, where are my friends now?
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of a warning about human nature, I think, that one there. The poor are shunned even by their neighbors, but the rich have many friends. Similar. And that one's even more. It's just an observation. It's just saying that is often the case. But I think it's worth thinking about. I mean, do we favor people who we think could potentially offer us something?
Yeah.
And it may not just be wealth, because this is unfortunately the way that the world works.
Yeah.
But I think we've got to be very careful that we're not just gravitating towards people of means and, you know,
or fame even.
Yeah, that's right.
You see that wealth after, if there's someone, you know, who's around, who's famous, there's hundreds of people all crowding around them kind of thing, and no one talking to this person, no one knows over here, and yet in God's sight,
we're all
equal there. So I think that's, you know, that is reality. And I think the other thing that's interesting around wealth and how it can impact the way we treat others is that we tend to when people are wealthy, we tend to overlook things about their behavior.
Yeah.
That otherwise we wouldn't.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, again, that's, you know, I'm not saying we should be judging people, but I think we need to be mindful that wealth shouldn't taint what we know is right and what integrity is.
That's right. Wealth does not cover a multitude of sins. In fact, often it can cause a multitude of sins.
I think people think it does cover a multitude of sins.
True. Well, connecting with what we were saying before about debt, you know, in Proverbs 22:7, it says, the rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is a slave to the lender. And again, it's just often the way that things work, you know. And again, there, I think it's saying this is something to avoid if you can. And this is in the light of, you know, in the light of diligence and do your best and to sort of, you know, get out from underneath this kind of slavery. And yet there's an inevitability about this observation is that the wealthier are always going to be in this position of greater power.
Yeah.
And that's just the way that life tends to work. We'll get to the warnings about wealth in the moment, because there's plenty of warnings for the wealthy. And they, you know, warnings for the wealthy are very much picked up in the New Testament.
Yeah.
But in contrast to that, you know, 10 verse 15, Proverbs 10, 15, the wealth of the rich is their fortified city, but poverty is the ruin of the poor. So again, the sense here is, again, it's not saying that we should find our security primarily in our wealth. And yet there is security. This is the realism of this. There is a measure of security in wealth. You know, in poverty, you just don't have the security.
But at the same time, you know, and again, not advocating that, you know, we need to be diligent and wealth is not a bad thing. But as you've often said, the light shines brightest in the darkest places. Yeah. And it interests me that people are seemingly poor people who we would say perhaps don't have much seem to be way more at peace and depending on God's provision
than
people who have much. And it talks about, you know, I think we're going to move into an area where there's some of these sayings, it's better this than that. And, and better a little with the fear of the Lord than great wealth with
You know? Yeah. Better a small serving of vegetables with love than a fattened calf with hatred.
Yeah. Yeah.
Better a dry crust with peace and quiet than a house full of feasting with strife.
Yeah.
Better the poor whose walk is blameless than the rich whose ways are perverse.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, this is, you know, important because we need to recognize that these proverbs are, you know, proverbs functioning within a context, a society that was governed by a law that had all sorts of provisions for the poor. I mean, the Mosaic law is remarkable for the multi-level provisions for the poor. Most notably, because poverty is generally associated with lack of land. Like if you lost your land, that was in a sense the poor were the poor because they didn't have land. I mean, of course, there were times of famine when crops would fail and you could become poor for that. And actually, it was often in times like that where poor people would lose their land. Often they would have to put their children into sort of bond service, you know, to richer people. And so the loss of land and even the loss of families who would essentially become slaves to richer people to pay off debts. The provisions, they're amazing and very unique provisions in the Mosaic law. First of all, at the end of 7 years, all slaves had to be set free.
Yeah.
So you couldn't be in bond service as a Jewish person for more than 7 years.
Yeah.
You had the option to be set free. At the end of every 49 years, all land allotments would revert back to the original traditional share from the time of Joshua, right? Mm. So the original share of the land, that was always going to revert back. So the idea was you could take land, but there was never a sense that it was yours. And importantly, you were never really going to be able to pass it along to your children because at some point it was going to go back to its traditional owners. And land in ancient Israel was always valued according to the number of, well, it should have been. This is the thing. It didn't always work like this, but when things went well, land was valued, you know, according to how many years left till the year of Jubilee.
Right.
When all the land would revert back to its traditional owners.
And I think
owners.
Important here, we tend to think in our Western culture, land, you know, oh, that's a good investment. Land was like a job to them. That was how they fed themselves.
That
was how they sold produce. So essentially what we're saying is these are people who have lost their land, have lost their job.
Yeah.
In reality, their way of earning income and feeding their family. So, hence the importance of land.
Yeah, that's right. So it's not only diligence that, you know, is important in regards to, you know, our material needs, but also wisdom. And there are a lot of proverbs that connect folly with poverty. And I think it's important to say that, again, I know I'm repeating myself here, Stu.
Yeah. But it's important to say.
This isn't always the case, right? That, you know, that particularly if you have experienced great loss or if your business isn't going well, it's not necessarily because you have done stupid things, you know.
No, that's right.
And yet, the Proverbs are encouraged to think, because we're always encouraged in Scripture to take responsibility for what we can take responsibility for.
Exactly.
Did I do something stupid? Did I overspend? Did I not keep track of my finances? Did I not keep track of the condition of my flocks, as it says in the Proverbs before? You know, did I not do these things? Was I not diligent? Did I not weed the vineyard when I should have weeded the vineyard?
Or in our context, did I not do the research into whatever it is I'm planning to do or working to do and plan, rather than just, oh, that's a good idea, and jumping in? You know, Proverbs 21:5, the plans of the diligent lead to profit, as surely as haste leads to poverty, you know, taking the time to do our research and to think these things through and to pray about them and all those sorts of things.
Yeah, exactly. So it says in Proverbs 28:19, those who work their land will have abundant food, but those, and this is the focus here, but those who chase fantasies will have their fill of poverty. Mm. So just be careful at what that this plan that you've got isn't a pure fantasy.
Yeah.
Here's another one. An inheritance claimed too soon will not be blessed in the end. The wise store up choice food and olive oil, but fools gulp theirs down. Don't eat. And elsewhere it says, and I'm trying to think where this is. It's not in the Proverbs. I don't think it, but it could be in the Proverbs about don't eat your seed for sowing. You know, when your grain comes in, make sure you keep enough grain to sow, and you don't eat all your grain. I think this is I don't have it in front of me.
No.
And this is the same idea here. You know, like the wise store up choice food and olive oil, but fools gulp their down. Because this is, you know, remember, this is currency in this particular time.
Yeah.
These are resources. I mean, olive oil is very, you know, very, you know, expensive and storable, you know. Mm. Be wise and don't eat all of what is meant to be seed. Make sure that you're able to invest back, you know, for the longevity of your business.
Totally. 28:22, in the midst of all of that too, though, says the stingy are eager to get rich and are unaware
that's right,
poverty awaits them. You know, so that sense of not being stingy in investing enough of time, energy, effort, money, whatever it might be.
Yeah. It's the way that these proverbs work is a little bit like the sort of popular proverbs, you know, many hands make light work, but too many cooks spoil the broth.
Yeah.
You know, it's that.
Exactly.
It's these sayings that we have that sit on opposite ends of a scale, and wisdom is all about navigating in between those. So it's not too many cooks to spoil the broth, but enough hands to make light work, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is the sort of thing that the Proverbs are doing.
We then sort of move into a bit of the dangers of wealth and wealth. And as you said, I mean, I looked up a few scriptures from the New Testament where Jesus speaks to this a lot, but let's have a look at what Proverbs says.
Yeah.
Because it's interesting that the comparison between Jesus's kind of warning against wealth and the Proverbs kind of talking about wisdom bringing wealth. Obviously, the Proverbs now give us some warnings about that, but interesting contrast between Jesus's approach to wealth as well.
Well, and I mean, this is a point that Jesus brings up in the story of the rich man and Lazarus.
Yeah.
Proverbs 11, verse 4, wealth is worthless on the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death.
Mm.
So, and particularly at a time where there was this kind of association, this is interesting one in the light of what we've said, Stu, because often wealthy people would say, oh, I've been blessed and favored by the Lord.
Yep.
And so they would assume, because I'm wealthy, therefore I've been blessed by the Lord. That's why I think the story of the rich young man, why he was so cocky, because, you know, he's a rich young man, right?
Yeah.
And so I must be rich because I've done the right thing. And so there's the danger of a kind of cockiness or a sort of arrogance, you know. I'm rich because I've done all of these things right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you can maybe get a little bit too caught up on all the things you're doing right, and maybe, you know, there's the need to focus more on, okay, but are you fulfilling your responsibility?
Yeah.
Has wealth taken over your life? Is it making you arrogant? Because that would be much more serious.
Yeah.
I should say too, Stu, in world terms, we are the rich. the average person in Australian society is wealthy.
Top 3%.
In the top 3%. So I think these warnings, you know, really apply. Because let's face it, wealth can bring complacency.
Yep.
We can be very complacent because we have a lot of ease and, you know, we need to be really careful about this.
And interestingly enough, wealth can also bring a lack of generosity. You know, we see that in the story of the widow's mite, where she didn't have much, but she gave it all.
Yeah.
But as we get, you know, as we perhaps become more wealthy, it tends to trigger in us to want to have even more, and our generosity often goes in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those who trust in their riches will fall, but the righteous will thrive like a green leaf. And that's the key. It's the most important thing that God wants us to be his children, and that's a relationship of trust. And wealth is one of the things that can erode trust. It's true, as the proverb says, the wealth of the wealthy is like a fortified city. That's true, right?
Yeah.
Okay, but who do we trust in? Is God my fortress, or is the fortified city my fortress? You know, is God my provider? Is God the one whom I am trusting, or am I trusting in my bank account? That's the warning.
In 28:11, the rich are wise in their own eyes, but one who is poor and discerning sees how deluded they are.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of, it's a real sense of we don't get puffed up by our own success, in a sense.
Yeah.
There's the real understanding who we are.
Yeah, that's right. And certainly in terms of life goals, it's the Proverbs is not advocating the pursuit of wealth as such. I mean, it's saying be diligent, right?
Yeah.
Use the abilities and be a diligent person.
Yeah.
It's not saying be wealthy. It's saying be diligent.
Yeah.
And in fact, in 23:4, it says, do not wear yourself out to get rich and do not trust in your own cleverness. Cast but a glance at riches and they are gone, for they will surely sprout wings and fly off to the sky like an eagle. It's always, you know, it's always the case. We're never as secure as we think. And look, I mean, we probably live in a time where we're more secure than, you know, than ever. And yet, you know, let's just remember how quickly that can fail as well. So,
be good just to reflect, you know, we've kind of gone through the Proverbs. Be good just to reflect on a couple of passages on the New Testament. You know, obviously, there's the obvious warning from Jesus in Matthew 19:24. You know, again, I tell you, it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for someone who is rich to enter the kingdom of God. You know, and I think that's, again, a sense of we have the temptation to become dependent on our own ability to generate our wealth and to provide for ourselves.
That's right.
We do to depend on God and his.
That's right, because the danger is the bigger your wealth gets, the smaller your faith gets.
Yeah, that's great.
And you really have to, and they often correspond together. And remember, you know, Jesus says in Luke chapter 18, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth? He doesn't say, will I find righteousness on the earth?
Yeah.
Will I find, because faith is righteous. To be in a relationship of faith with God is to be in the right, in exactly the position that God wants.
Well, God said that to Abraham, didn't he?
Exactly.
And I attributed to him as righteousness.
That's right. Yeah. You've trusted me, and that means that you are exactly where I want you, in the right position, righteousness. Mm-hmm. And so, so that warning, you know, I think is always an important, and I think particularly for us to keep in mind, because we do have lots of safety nets, financial safety nets in our, you know, including insurances and all sorts of things. And honestly, the sheer amount of that can actually correspond with a diminishment of our faith.
Totally.
And I mean, I find it's when often we go through times where things are really, really tight and we're wondering, are we going to be able to pay the bills, or are we going to, is the business going to stay afloat? And you can wish that you didn't go through those times of stress, you know, but ultimately what I've discovered is the times when my faith has been most revitalized is actually in those times. And it's interesting. I've often said, God, I would rather not go through these times where I'm wondering, literally wondering, is the business going to collapse at the end of this month? Are we going to be able to pay these bills? I don't want to live like that. It's so stressful, right? And yet, at the same time, it's in those places that my faith is reactivated. And I find God in those moments. And that is, you know, that is more important than, you know, than anything. And I think it brings me back to this idea that the thing we need most is God. And often sometimes when you have less, you realize more your need for God grows. And I mean, this is a traditional proverb that I've always loved, and you've heard me quote from it often, Stu. You know, the richest man is not the one that has the most, but the one who needs the least. And there's something here about contentment. And I think contentment even itself makes us wiser and more productive. And so there's wisdom in that. So above all things, you know, we get back to the message of the Proverbs. Fear the Lord, serve the Lord, and make that your priority. And that becomes the orbit that brings everything else into alignment.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Thrive Deeper. Our home on the internet is thrivetoday.tv. You can contact us, ask questions, see all our resources and much more at our website, thrivetoday.tv. We really appreciate the questions and thoughts about what you're reading as we go through the Bible with Thrive. Until next time, our prayer is that these shows will inspire you to go deeper and thrive.